From the streets of Toronto to the backwoods of Bancroft, here's your Moose Country Minute with Mark Bonikoski.
Between the time most of us woke up last Monday, we had slept through summer and into fall. The passage took only, what, a millisecond perhaps? But the autumn equinox or autumn solstice happened at precisely 3:50 a.m. our time, when the sun passed directly over the equator, unseen by us, and the length of a day and a night were largely equal. That's when summer became autumn. I love autumn and the best of years, and I've seen plenty of them. The days are warm and the nights cool, so it's time when you can open up the windows to fresh air and sleep like a baby. And the autumn colors, like in the hills and vales driving from Toronto to Collingwood, in the Hastings Highlands where we once lived on Baptiste Lake, or in the Gatineau Hills, a short drive from our home in Ottawa, they still blow me away. People even pay for bus tours to see them, and whatever it costs, it's probably worth every damn penny. It's almost magical. If you stay up late on December 21st, you can be awake when autumn officially becomes winter, which will happen at precisely 11:19 p.m. our time. By then, there will hopefully be enough snow to form a good base for skiing and the snowmobile crowd, and maybe even cold enough for outdoor rinks or pond skating. I can remember as a boy skating on a small, shallow pond at our next-door neighbor's dairy farm. The ice was yellow, and sometimes you had to skate around mounds of frozen cow dung. But what the heck? I was only 10 years old, and yellow ice was better than no ice at all. For Outdoor Journal Radio, I'm Mark Bonikoski.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, no, we are not recommending any activity with yellow ice and snow. Okay, I want to throw a disclaimer out there.
And cow dung.
Angelo Viola, Stephen Labadie, or Labadie.
Oh, forgot about that.
Forgot about that. See, you're supposed to make notes. Derek Brandeo, Jessica Ellis on the line with us, because you know that's his little jingle. Back from a very successful outing with his buddies, fishing and hunting. Our in-house safety expert, his name is Bradley Schlurf. Good morning, Brad. How are you, bud?
Okay, I hope I'm not coming back to a new thing where now Steve's going to talk about your hair every morning.
Yeah, he's trying. He's trying real hard. Talk to us about the hunt.
Oh, it was good. So the drill is we go up there, we grouse hunt in the morning, make our way to a small lake, different small lakes every day, and fish for walleye. And grouse hunt our way back to the cabin.
Grouse hunting is a fascinating activity, isn't it? I've never done it, but I've talked to enough guys who do, and I've seen enough grouse in the wild and the way they behave and stuff. It's a very cool hunt.
Hey, you know what? Here's an idea. You and Pete, maybe get the Beasley brothers to take you and show you how it's done. Go up to Billy's Kenegamesis Lake Lodge next fall. Do what we did.
Is that where you were?
Half a season's worth of episodes all in 1 week.
No kidding. You went fishing as well?
Oh, yeah. We were fishing for walleye every day.
And?
Oh, we did well. I'll send pictures if you need the verification again.
Like, it's like pulling teeth with you. It's no big secret. You already said where you were. It's not like you're hiding this hidden gem. You can talk to us about it.
The municipality of Greenstone, so the power goes out. And I look at the Ontario Hydro notification. It goes from, Hydro One, goes from just outside Hearst. One of the guys who goes with us, Mark Sabrin, lived up there, knows the area very well, says the municipality of Greenstone alone, you could put two countries of France in it. Then I look at the Hydro One population affected, 4,100.
Holy mackerel. Wow. Did they get it sorted out?
Oh, it was all sorted out the next day. Yeah. It was good. But just the massive size of it, and it's full of little lakes that are full of walleye and northern pike.
Wow. And they're all accessible, or most of them are accessible?
Some of them you have to carry a little bit to get to them, like maybe 20 yards.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Needless to say, a good time was had by all then.
It was a good time.
Wonderful. I want to talk to you today about property ownership and trespassing during the hunting season, which takes place quite a bit from what I understand. Talk to us about that.
So in You know, this is another complication. When I was listening to you guys a little earlier about, you know, how you got to figure out time zones and all that. Well, wildlife management units in Ontario are complicated to figure out, too. You need to know when you're in to know what seasons are on and, therefore, how your behaviors are. Migratory birds opens today for the second part in most of southern Ontario. So these are the things that lead to trespassing. I talked to all the farmers I have permission on. They're at least 2 weeks behind, and most places they don't want anybody going onto their fields right now because they've got crops that haven't taken off.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that obviously is going to be an issue. And would you say, though, that most hunters are conscientious when it comes to trespassing? Do they generally discuss it with the landowner in advance or not?
Okay, you know, once in a while I make up a statistic that maybe I just made up, but yeah. I'm going to bet that this is accurate.
Okay.
95-98% of all hunters are the most conscientious people there are. They're stewards of the reserve. This is all true, not making it up. But there's this odd group of idiots that can wreck it for everybody else. And that's the people that caused the problems, were landowners that for years have let people go on and hunt or snowmobile or whatever activities on their property, that people abuse that. So, yeah, most hunters do it, but if you desire to hunt someplace, you need to track down the owner and get permission, period.
And what's involved in that? I mean, is it simply, you know, driving up and knocking on the door? Do you have to have something in writing? Like, how complicated is it?
Well, some places, for instance, Manitoulin Island, you have to have an actual landowner permission form with you when you're hunting there because the whole island is private property. But it's not required other places. It's a good idea to do it, though. It's an M&R form. You can download it, fill it out. But it literally is as simple as seeing that landowner on his tractor or driving up to the house, sometimes watching for the odd dog, but and asking. And the worst that happens is they say no, and very often they say no because they've had the same people, like me, that hunt there year after year after year. So they, you know, they're good that way. But, yeah, just go up and ask. And then it never hurts to have some sort of a thank you gift when you get that permission, like some beverages or maybe food or something. You can say, well, thanks very much for the opportunity. And if they say no, politely say, well, I appreciate that. In fact, one place I got permission, the guy called me back later and said only because I was so nice to him when he said no to me.
Wow. Wow. And what's the consequences, Brad? Like, what happens if somebody says no and, you know, somebody does it anyways?
So there's kind of two different offenses. There's just flat-out trespassing and the Trespass to Property Act, and there's also trespass to hunt, which has a bigger penalty. So, and those are enforced by the police, and actually landowners have the right to enforce the Trespass to Property Act themselves, but police and conservation officers enforce both of those things. So they call the cops, come, and you're going to get a ticket, booted off the property, etc.
There's no confiscating of guns or vehicles or anything at that point?
No.
No, okay. Just checking. Not that I'm going
And then the vehicles may get more complicated because the person that will trespass may often get into, like, over limits, not having the proper licenses and stuff like that. And then the M&R and police officers have a whole plethora of nasty things that can happen to you when you get caught doing all those other things. And I'm willing to guarantee that a conservation officer that shows up to deal with a trespass a hunt complaint is going to look very carefully at all your stuff.
No kidding. Any other safety concerns that we should hear about?
Well, again, you got to check the wildlife management units to verify this, but a lot of the other seasons are opening up now or in the next few days, so there's the issue of Hunter Orange. So Hunter Orange is only mandatory if there is a firearm season on for elk, moose, or deer in that wildlife management unit when you're hunting. So you have to wear Blaze Orange in those circumstances, but other people going in the bush, it's a good idea to wear bright colors of Blaze Orange, too. Every once in a while, there's this so-called accident that will happen, and it's very often not another hunter. Sometimes it is, but Blaze Orange is a good idea in the bush
and
now.
There's a certain amount of it you have to have on, too, isn't there?
It's
not just a matter of getting a little little piece of Blaze Orange tape and taping it to your hat. Like, there's a certain... Yep, go ahead.
And there's a plethora of stuff that you can buy. Inexpensive, you can go to one of the big box places and buy a Blaze. You have to have a Blaze hat, too. A Blaze hat and a vest for about $15. So it's not like this is going to set you back a fortune.
There you go. What else can we say? I mean, I feel safer already just having you on talking to us about that.
I feel safer even just sitting here talking about it instead of being out in the rain goose hunting.
Nice to have you back, Bradley. You take care, my friend.
You too. Talk to you later.
Brad Schlarf, a retired staff sergeant with the Ontario Provincial Police, now our in-house safety expert, playing it safe.